Hey, I told you to move the beans.
All you have to do is move it.
Move the beans.
Hey, move the beans.
M-O-V-E.
This is the Move the Beans podcast. Stories of ordinary habits that have extraordinary results.
Here's your host, Dan Abaticola.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Move the Beans podcast. Stories of ordinary habits that have extraordinary results. This episode, episode 19, is powered by Dominion Lighting and Solar. They exist to create a healthy and sustainable world. You can reach out to Dominion Lighting and Solar at dominion.solar. And if you could do me a favor, give the Move the Beans podcast a 5-star review on any platform that you're listening on. That really helps out the podcast. Hey, so with February upon us and spring training baseball just around the corner, I figured it'd be a great time to have our baseball expert, Mr. Jim Donovan, in to talk about tips, training habits to get your son or daughter excelling at baseball or softball this spring and this baseball softball season. And so Jim and I talk a little bit about training habits, tips, habits that they can do to elevate their game to another level. Also, we talk a little bit about Major League Baseball cheating scandal and all that fun. So I know you're going to enjoy the conversation at the Move the Beans podcast studio, episode 19, with my good buddy, Mr. Jim Donovan.
Move the Beans!
Hey, we are with Jim Donovan. How you doing, Jimbo?
I'm doing good, Daniel.
Why do we have to be so official and weird?
That's just the way we roll.
I know. That's kind of crazy. You might have to get a little bit closer to the microphone there.
Yeah. Okay.
There you go.
There we go.
You want a telephone book? I'll scoot you up. There you go. Scoot you up.
All righty.
There you go. So how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. How was your holidays and everything? We haven't talked for a little bit.
Yeah. You know, it was good overall. Yeah. Holidays aren't easy for us, but overall it was decent.
Holidays aren't easy for anybody.
And that's true.
Put what you guys ran through.
Yeah.
But holidays are kind of crazy for everybody.
Yeah, it kind of puts a cloud over it. There's no question. But then I think we try to be grateful for the things we have, which is helpful.
Yeah, that's always good. I think everyone should do that. So that's your first tip of the day, listeners.
Be grateful.
Be grateful. So Jim is a return guest. You're the second of return guests. Pretty good. But let me just tell you this. You are the highest listened to podcast at the Move the Beans podcast.
Wow.
I know. So you're not just in, I don't even want to hear what you have to say. I just want your name to be out there so more listeners. You have a huge following in Kazakhstan.
Do I?
Massive. And I don't know.
I believe that.
I don't know. I mean, we have like 8 other countries that listen to the Move the Beans podcast. We track what countries.
Is that right?
We don't go episode to episode, but I'm sure you are huge in Kazakhstan.
I believe that.
Yeah, totally. I just look at you and I see Kazakhstan listeners. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So all you out there wearing those weird like man thongs and swinging the bat around, we appreciate you listening. So that's always good. So Jim is the highest rated, highest listened to podcast, Move the Beans. I think you were 5, right? Were you 3 or 5? I know Adam Dahl was 4.
I think it was 5.
Yeah, you were 5. Yeah. Okay. So Jim is here specifically because it's, you know, start of February, but in 1 week, one of the greatest things in all of sports happened, the greatest 4 words in sports. Ready? Pitchers and catchers report.
Yes.
And I'm pretty excited. I always love that.
It's a great time of year.
Yeah, it is, because then you start thinking in my mind, I'm starting to think like the weather's going to get warmer, baseball, you hear the crack of the bat. I mean, so winter is starting to be in the rearview mirror. So whenever you see pitchers and catchers report, even though it's cold out, but you see it on the news, you see guys reporting in Arizona or Florida or wherever, that's always a good sign.
That was always one of my favorite things as a kid growing up. You'd see those clips on the news.
Yeah.
And it was just a preview of things to come.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk a little bit about just basic nuts and bolts of baseball training and tips and habits, like how do I swing better? How do I pitch better? What are the things that I can do as far as mechanics or training habits that maybe your son or daughter who is playing baseball or softball, and you can hear a couple of the tips that Jim has and habits that he has that he gives his students that you can implement in your son or daughter's life that they could kind of raise the bar this season. So I know Jim has a ton of them, but before we get into that, let's talk a little bit Major League Baseball and cheating.
Is there something going on in Major League Baseball? I haven't heard.
Cheating scandal. Yes. So I knew you would have some thoughts on it. So
I think it's sign stealing has been part of the game for as long as the game has been around. But to me, the real difference here is the technology enhancement. And that basically these people are using video. And in some cases, it appears they're using some sensor buzzer sorts of mechanisms signal the batter.
Which they denied, right? They denied that?
I don't know. I haven't heard that.
Yeah, I think they denied it, but there were some pictures that
be proven.
Yeah, there was a picture on Altuve's jersey that it's like a little like point sticking up by his shoulder, but they denied all that. And then you didn't hear about it. So maybe they, you know.
Was it proven?
Well, I don't know if it's proven either way, but I think Major League Baseball just wants to say, you know, like, okay, we're killing the whole game. Yeah.
Right.
This is, even if they were doing it, let's just not stop, you know, stop talking about it. So, so what do you think about all of it?
It kind of bums me out in some ways, because I feel like it's a great game. And when we're taking some of that, I guess it's not pure, but you're taking some of that away, which I don't like. But I do realize that it's highly competitive and there's a lot of money at stake and people are going to do what they're going to do to try to gain an advantage.
Yeah.
And, you know, these days, you know, one of the things that I talk about a lot with my students is approach. And approach basically means the strategy and how you attack the pitcher. Not literally, but, you know, how do you decide what you're going to try to do in your at-bats? Because now there's something that's evolved called pitch design, where a pitcher will essentially use their release point and what they call tunneling, which is the idea of when you release a ball, it's sort of like, imagine, it's going to go off track for a bit, but it'll bring it back. You're going to watch fireworks and you see that firework shoot up in the air. And then it starbursts into different directions. So if you can imagine that the pitcher is throwing one of those fireworks out of his hands, and then it will split off in different directions. But it all came from that one initial area.
Okay.
That's what tunneling has become. So a pitcher will take, say they have a three-pitch mix. They have a fastball, changeup, and a curveball. You imagine that ball is released, and the curveball will break to the left, down to the left. The changeup will break down into the right, and the fastball will stay up. So it's like, but they all come from the exact same place. And it used to be pitchers weren't that good at hiding the difference between their pitches.
Mm.
But now they're getting so good at it, and they're literally designing pitches based on how the pitchers can stay in that tunnel and which pitches complement one another the best, that it makes hitting that much harder.
Wow.
So you as a hitter are trying to figure out, all right, what am I going to look for on this given pitch, the given situation? And ideally, you want to at least get it down to two possibilities. And in their case, they've gotten it down to one possibility.
Really?
They know, I believe they know the exact pitch, and they might even have a good idea about the location. So it's, big league hitters are incredibly talented.
Yeah.
And they're able to, you know, you could throw 100 miles an hour plus, and if they know it's coming, they're going to barrel it
they
up.
They can hit it, yeah.
And if it's, or if it doesn't have a lot of movement. So it's just, they have gained, they figured out a way to take the hardest part of hitting out of the mix.
Yeah.
Which is the decision or the understanding of which pitch is coming.
Yeah.
Because if you know what's coming, there's a saying that if you know what you're looking for, you'll see it faster.
Yeah.
And that's true. That's the way the brain works. So if you know you're looking for a slider like Altuve was on Aroldis Chapman, you're going to see it faster and then can respond to it.
You are so sexy. talking, you should see his arm movements. He was like throwing knucklers and curves or sliders. Gosh, I could talk baseball. I could listen to your baseball talk all day. Okay. So you said, you know, people have been stealing signs since the game began.
Yeah.
Weren't they using like garbage cans too? Like banging
it? So my understanding was in this particular case, there was a camera in center field.
Okay.
And for some reason, they were allowed to have a monitor, a live monitor, on-time monitor in the dugout. And I can't remember what the rationale was, but for some reason, they were allowed to have that close to the dugout. So what they did was they had somebody. My understanding was they had a person essentially decoding the signs.
Okay.
And then telling somebody, sort of sending the message to bang the can if it was an off speed or I forget what the specifics
were.
So
one bang would be off speed, one would be, or two bangs would be like a fastball.
Right. Right.
And so you would hear that as a hitter in the, you could hear that in the box.
Yes. Yeah.
And so all you had to know is not really necessary location, but what's coming, and you could kind of gauge your swing on that.
Exactly. And I think, you know, it's not uncommon for all sorts of teams to, you know, pitchers will have what they call a tell. So if they're going to throw a fastball, they look a certain way, or they move their glove, hand, finger a certain way. Mm. So kids, you know, particularly in college baseball, they spend a lot of time and effort on trying to pick up the pitcher's tells or trying to pick up the signs from the dugout.
Okay.
And one of the reasons that University of Michigan, if you may have seen, they have cards.
Yeah, Joe was looking down. Yeah.
Yes. So he'll put out, typically it's a three number sequence which denotes a number on the card that he looks at, and that's a whatever pitch. It's a slider or a fastball. And those numbers change day to day.
Okay.
So, you know, you can't, it's very hard to steal signs.
Okay.
So that's because, you know, the people can say, all right, well, if the pitching coach touches his nose and his ear and certain number of times, they can kind of figure that out.
Yeah.
It's part of the game for the bench players.
And that's what it was back in the day, right?
Yeah.
It was just, okay.
Absolutely. And people don't have a hard time with that. They know it's a part of the deal.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, you'll see, and I suspect that people were suspecting video cheating as well, well earlier than that, because if you notice, when a pitcher and catcher meet at the mound, they often hold their gloves over their mouth. So you have to think that that's been suspected for a while.
Okay.
But it was.
So like when you were playing, you know, competitive baseball back in the day, like, was it something you guys were looking for? Like signs, like coaching signs?
Really not so much.
I think I just asked you, did you cheat, Jim? No.
For me, I have to be honest with you. Now, we didn't have the kind of pitch tunneling that some of these pitchers have now. So my job as a hitter was a lot easier because usually there was something significant that the pitcher did differently on a fastball versus a breaking ball.
Okay.
So, you know, pitchers, you know, our guys would, you know, come back after their at bat, for example, and say, oh, this guy's got this.
Or
he's got a breaking ball. And I actually didn't like that. I didn't want that information.
Because it would be put in your head and then you would.
Exactly. Yeah. I trusted my ability to see the pitcher because I watched him closely and to see those differences and react to them.
Okay.
So it just never worked for me.
Okay.
I never trusted it enough. So, but there are some who definitely do.
Okay.
And I think I can't say that we in those days did a whole heck of a lot of it.
Okay.
At least I wasn't a part of it.
Okay. You know, I did a little coaching baseball. I just started that sentence and Jim started smiling. That was horrible. So I have a reputation for sure. Okay.
This one with spikes on, right? Cleats?
I would wear my spikes. Yeah. We knew about that.
Clean shoes.
Yeah. Okay. So I would do a bunch of signs and then like I would tell the kids the signs in the dugout before the game. That's what park district coaches do. And then like seriously 30 seconds after I gave them, I'm like, I don't even know what I said.
Oh, you didn't know.
I didn't know what I said.
So was it that they didn't know?
Well, they didn't know, but they were like, Coach, what was this again? I'm like, I don't know. What did I say? And they're like, I don't know. And so we were like, I'm like, just go out there and swing. I don't care. So that was a problem.
Yeah.
That's probably why I was a bad coach. And then I would be like, okay, if I'm going to confuse myself with the signs, this is what I started doing. I got so, well, the kids wouldn't even look down at you because they were 10, 11, 12.
Right.
They don't look down.
Right.
And so I'm like, I'm just going to give them commands. But listen to the beauty of a batacola and my coaching. I would literally tell them, I would walk down a little bit so that opposing dugout would hear me, bunt the ball. But here's the beauty of me, okay? If it was an odd inning, odd number inning, do the opposite of whatever I say.
Oh, wow.
Boom.
You are crafty.
Boom.
Look at that.
Boom, do the opposite. If it's an even numbered inning, do what I say. Whether it's steal, hey, you're stealing on this pitch. I'm tired of it. I would pretend like I was annoyed. If you're not going to watch the signs, just steal. But it was the third inning. That meant do the opposite.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Boom.
So how did you communicate that before you went out for that inning? You'd say, okay, guys, it's an odd inning.
Well, no.
Oppo signs.
Yeah, no, I would say, like, before the game, I would say, like, odd number innings, opposite, even.
And that played out fine?
No.
Okay.
No, it didn't. It was horrible because I switched it up every game. And then, like, about, I don't know, midway through the first inning, I forget what I said. Did I say odd number opposite or even number opposite? I don't know.
You didn't have a cheat card for you?
No, I needed that. Yeah, so yeah. It backfired a few times when I told the kid, hey, bunt the ball. I'm thinking he's doing the op. No, I'm.
And he does it?
No, I'm saying bunt the ball. Okay. Do the opposite. That's what I was thinking.
Right.
And no, wait, what am I doing now? I thought he was in a bunt, but he's free swinging. And I'm like 15 feet down the line and I get a, like a liner.
A screamer?
Yeah. Over my head. Like, what? I said, I almost killed myself with these stupid signs. Then I started going to, hey, if my hat is turned backwards, you're bunting. If it's front, like just swing away. But you know me, I wear a hat a lot.
Yeah.
My hat is backwards 95% of the time.
So they were all bunting. Every guy's bunting.
Five innings straight. I'm like, why is everyone squaring around? My hat, I got to keep on. I was a mess. I needed to cheat.
Yeah.
A little bit. I needed to cheat.
You needed
a
cheat sheet. That's what you needed.
That's probably, or I just needed to. I was thinking about too many things, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my verbal signs, it screwed up a couple of coaches every once in a while. Like, move in, he's bunting. Come on, he just said it. And then I almost got a like a 10-year-old killed.
Right.
So that, it was just a mess.
Right.
It was horrible.
A little complicated.
Yeah. It was, I'm like, he's not listening to me. It wasn't my fault. Your kid has a baseball in his face. So I was horrible with, I was a horrible coach. Can I just say that?
Somehow I doubt that completely. But, you know, I'm sure there are things you could have done better.
There's a lot of things within the lines I could have done better. I think I was good outside the lines.
Okay.
Like when one of my players had a slump, we buried him. We had a funeral service for his bat. We literally had a funeral like, service
yeah,
for
that's
bat.
That's awesome.
And the kids were like, they didn't know what happened. And I turned to like what kid who's pretty creative. And I said, you want to say a few words? And the kid, without skipping a beat, launched into this like memorial about this kid's aluminum bat.
Oh my gosh.
Perfect until we went back for the next game a couple days later. The player whose bat it was, he dug it up.
I was wondering if that might happen.
Yeah, he was like a bat gravedigger. I don't know, stealer or whatever you call it. But I'm like, hey, you have
grave
your bat?
Robber.
Yeah, yeah, grave. I'm like, you have your bat? And he's like, yeah, I took it. I'm like, it was cracked. It was a little bad. It's cracked. Oh, he's like, it was his lucky bat. So anyways, I was sorry to all you parents who were on my team. I apologize. And if I almost got your kid killed, I'm sorry.
It's therapeutic to get this stuff out.
Totally.
I'm always here for you.
I knew you wouldn't be harsh. You wouldn't be like, oh, you do stink as a coach. We were horrible. I knew you'd be encouraging.
I try to be.
Thank you. Okay, so let's. And your parents are probably like, let's get this some tips. I want my kid to make it to the major league. Okay, let's go.
Good luck with
yeah,
that.
Good luck. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk training habits or tips or kind of let's dive into this.
Yeah, so when I thought about that, the first thing that came to my mind is how to make it, what could be something that people could use with no help or very little help or very little space. And I always go back to the tool of all tools in baseball and softball, the tee.
Okay.
And the tee is the best because it's never late and it always throws strikes.
Nice.
So if you can learn how to use it, it can be a game changer. And I think where I tend to go first is my guiding principle, which is quality over quantity. And I think so many times I'll hear stories about kids that'll say, hey, I just went, I'll say, did you hit this week? Oh yeah, I hit 3 buckets off a tee. I'm like, okay, did you do that quickly? Did you have a process or method or whatever? And oftentimes they just, if I dig deeper, I talk to the parents, they just rush through 3 buckets to say they did 3 buckets. So that is definitely not what we're trying to do here. Because I think if you think about, you know, we talked about last time a little bit about routines, where how you enter the box, how you stand in the box, how your body is positioned and so forth is vital to the success in hitting. So if we can have a routine where you step into the box, up to a tee that is, you know, can be in front of a tarp hanging in your garage.
It
can be a net, whatever. And if you can turn this into a process where you can work on your body, you know, work on physically swinging the bat and the process you go through swinging the bat and marry that with the mind, not make it a cardio workout. We don't need that.
Okay.
It can be very successful. So setting the routine is number one. And I think you also want to create a presence, a pace and speed of how you step in, which is as much like a batter in a game as you possibly can. And what you can always do is you can refer to YouTube videos to see how professional or college players step in the batter's box and copy one and find or make one up. So that's where you start with that. The keys in any sort of a T-work practice are contact points. You know what a contact point is?
I do not.
Contact point.
I probably should, right?
Contact point is the place in the zone where the bat and ball meet.
I knew that. Just playing
dumb. So, and I think maybe we could get a picture to refer to this maybe with the launch of this podcast.
Okay.
I'll have a picture of a home plate and
stuff. Okay, gotcha.
To refer in case it doesn't make sense. So, in general, when you're hitting off a tee, an inside pitch is more out in front of the plate. A pitch down the middle is sort of centered. And this diagonal line can be drawn from the farthest out in front inside pitch to the outside pitch, which is closer to the catcher.
Okay, deeper.
Deeper.
Yeah, okay.
So, understanding those contact points is an incredibly important part of hitting, because those represent timing. It's essentially a structure for timing. And working off a tee can help you get comfortable hitting in those different timing, because it feels different to
those
hit a ball
timing zones
on the pull side than it does on a pitch that's outside.
So you suggest like literally just moving the tee back and forth along the diagonal line.
Exactly. Okay. Literally. And I think it's good to have kind of a process, a rhythm, or not a rhythm, but a routine or structure to how you do it. So, for example, I was asking one of my students today, how do you do your tee work? And she was saying how she, you know, she starts on the middle, moves to the inside, then goes to the outside. You know, she's like 5-5-5.
Okay.
And then she goes inside, outside, five, back and forth. And then she does something else. But just for example, I don't know that there's magic to that. There's different people come up with different processes that feel good. But the important thing is when you step up and take a swing, you are aware that you're trying to hit a ball that's an inside pitch, or you're trying to hit a ball that's an outside pitch, and you can work on being balanced and having and developing a repetitive or a repeatable movement within those
and so in the parameters. game when you see an inside pitch coming, your body already knows, your muscle memory already knows how to swing at that bat. That's what you're training yourself
absolutely
to do.
And I think the other thing that a lot of people do when they hit off a tee is, if you know, you set the ball on top of the tee.
Mm-hmm.
So what kids will typically do is stare down at the ball on the tee. Problem is, in a game,
you're not doing that.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So it's helpful to be going through a tracking, a faux tracking process where you're looking out at a pitcher, tracking your head back to that ball on the tee as you're stepping to swing at it.
Okay. Now it might be a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Like whenever my kids would be working off a tee and I'm like, hey, let your dad get in there. Let me take a couple swings. And I would I dribble it off. I could never even make solid contact.
Yeah.
Which is, that's probably more problems that we can discuss today. But you know what I had a problem with? Like it was almost like when I go to a golf, like a golf driving range. I had a problem like where to put my feet because it didn't feel comfortable, because I would see the ball there and I would be like, I don't know where I would position myself. I could never get comfortable behind a tee. Like where do you put your feet?
Okay. So, and that can vary. Unfortunately, I hate to say this, it's not going to be an easy answer necessarily because you have different hitters have different arm lengths.
Okay.
Different body shapes. So that can change your position relative to the ball.
Okay.
So I think in general, if you want to think about an inside, so you're standing, your feet are square, straight to the edge of home plate.
Mm-hmm.
You can be, you can be closer or farther. I like to be sort of in a neutral spot where I would reach over with my bat and sort of tap the middle of home plate comfortably. And that puts you in a position that is where you can reach the outside part of the plate somewhat reasonably. So then if you're talking about placing the tee for the contact points, in general, the inside pitch, if I'm a right-handed hitter, my left, the inside pitch contact point will be, I don't know, probably definitely less than a foot in front of my left foot.
Okay.
And then the down the middle will be at or about my left foot. And the outside pitch will be inside of my left foot toward my right foot.
Okay.
Now, like I said, that it can vary based on your size, your arm's length, and so forth. But in general, you're going to have, if you're thinking about your feet, inside pitch will be to the left or outside of the limits of your feet. The down the middle will be right about at the left foot.
And okay.
The outside will be inside of the left foot.
Is there a correlation between students that you have that are really good at hitting off the tee and just really good hitters?
You mean sort of like which came first, the chicken or the egg? Or
yeah, like, okay,
or
so
do the good ones usually do well off the tee?
Well, yeah, yeah.
I think so. In my experience, that's been the case. It's not always the case, and there's a lot of kids that hate hitting off a tee.
But they're good hitters.
But they're good hitters.
Yeah.
You know, and I just heard recently that the Houston Astros, there they are again, they don't hit off tees. All they do is front toss or live pitch.
Okay.
But they have the personnel to be able to toss balls to people instead of have tees. So one of the things that people complain to me about is it doesn't feel good to hit off a tee. And you don't feel powerful. And the reality is you don't have the velocity of the pitch coming at you. So the contact just doesn't feel the same, and you have to generate more of the power on your own.
Okay.
And one of the hints that I give is to try not to overpower the ball off a tee, to understand that it's not going to be a feel superpowered, and to try to stay smooth and stay balanced, and just try to really focus on contact on the sweet spot of the barrel. And I think as it relates to the contact points, you can find your arms, as you try to say, all right, I've got this ball on a tee, I'm going to try to hold the sweet spot of my bat up to that ball in a relative hitter's position. And again, this is a picture we could add with the podcast. Usually there's a relatively comfortable feeling about the distance.
Okay.
If you're doing it correctly.
Okay. Now, as far as, and maybe you don't even know this or it doesn't even matter, but that just popped in my head. With your students in particular, girls or guys better hitting off the tee?
Well, girls are more willing to try it.
Okay.
They're more compliant.
Okay.
Let's just say.
Because guys just want to jack the ball all
over the place. They're knuckleheads a lot of times. And they resist in general. When I teach girls versus boys, girls are far more willing to take any recommendation.
Really?
Relative to anything. And it's like they don't have that initial wall that needs to be broken down.
Okay.
Some do, but it's much more uncommon. They're just better. They're more compliant students. It's like they're, okay, yeah, tell me what I want, what you think I should do.
So for the short answer of it, girls are better.
Yeah. Okay. I would say so.
No, because that popped in my head, like maybe because they didn't want to smack the ball over the fence. They were just looking to just make contact or whatever. And maybe that made them better. That's why I only asked about the difference between guys and girls.
Interesting. I should think about that.
Yeah.
Give that some thought, reflection.
Take video of all your students and then watch them afterwards for hours.
Yeah. Well, I do analyze tape. That is definitely a part of the process.
Okay.
But I think in general, the girls are less inclined to kind of over-muscle the ball.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Which is good.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean there aren't some. I mean, there's examples on both sides.
Now, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking, like, in my mind, I picture like a big old fat slob, like, guy in a 16-inch softball league, like, hitting the ball off the tee. Like, you know, you ever, like, in the league where they stand, like, 10 feet back
at
home plate and they run up?
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, I just pictured some goof on a tee doing that. Like, ooh, I'm just going to swing and run up and boom. Because that's where, like, whenever...
Happy Gilmore.
Yeah. Whenever I would hit off a tee just for fooling around, I would always want to be, like, it felt comfortable, but it was totally bad to be behind the plate, totally, for some reason. I just... Having the ball there and seeing it just screwed me up. And I wanted to be behind the plate and kind of almost do, like, a little run to jump at it. It was horrible.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's...
That's hard to even comprehend.
I know, but it just... It didn't feel comfortable if I was, like... at a set position where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
For me as an adult, stupid person, it didn't feel comfortable. I don't know. Just
interesting.
None of your students have those problems.
I've yet to run across that problem.
You ask your students, go, Jimmy, do you ever feel like just running up from about 10 feet away?
Well, they do. I will say this. They often like to do a Happy Gilmore.
Oh, okay.
And they often like to do a hit lefty. Like hit the righties love to hit lefty and vice versa.
Everyone likes to do that.
They love it.
Like when I was coaching, like, hey, coach, we'll be down by like 30 or up by 30, mostly down by 30. Can I bet lefty? I'm like, yeah. No, we got three hits all game.
Right. You're a clown.
Well, yeah, let's try and get a hit. Like we're not screwing around anymore. So, but kids still want to do that.
All the time. And it's actually, I had a great client who was a doctor, like a really good rehab guy. And he had a daughter who had some back issues. So he would have her bat, turn around and bat lefty, take like 10 to 15 swings every time she hit with me and said, it's a great idea to do, to add a little bit of a counterbalance to the back.
Oh, okay.
For the spine, sake of the spine. But the kids who do it, that's not why they're doing it.
They want to be switch hitter.
Exactly. And now, we have fun with it though.
I mean, how does a kid, is there a good way to become a switch hitter? Like just the practice, just keep on.
Well, I actually have one in process right now where she started as a right-handed hitter. She's really fast.
Okay.
And she's in the process of changing over to lefty.
Because she's that much closer.
There's something called slapping in softball.
Yeah.
And it's.
And so
it's,
in it's parenting too.
you said daily, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Kids.
So she, or these slappers are on the run.
Okay.
And they develop amazing precision, bat control, and the ability to put the ball in different places and then take off.
Especially with they almost look like they're running, kind of like Ichiro.
Yeah. Running, no, that's exactly right.
They're running before they even get out of the box. They even hit the ball.
They truly are.
Yeah.
They truly are. Now, there is a moment, a brief moment when their left foot is connected to the ground when they're actually hitting the ball.
Yeah.
But it is definitely a moving swing.
On its way. They're on their way to first. And the baselines in softball, they're pretty short.
60 feet.
Yeah. So that.
Yeah.
And she's fast.
Very.
She can get there pretty quick.
Yeah. So what was recommended to her, and I've actually done this for a certain organization a couple different times where they have a person they want to become a slapper and they will send them to me to teach them how to hit lefty first.
Okay.
Stationary.
Okay.
Because if you're only slapping, let's just say you're more dangerous if you can do both.
Okay.
So I have one who is in process to become a slapper who's never hit lefty. And I have another one who is a slapper who I'm working on her stationary hitting lefty.
It just sounded really dirty right now.
So you're not all clean.
Okay, good. You're not working with any boys who are currently want to be slappers.
No, there is.
Good, Jim. I just wanted to get that out for the record because
thankfully, there's no slappers.
Good. My deviant mind was going, when is he going to start talking about kids slapping? So many directions. Yes. So how long does it take to get to a point where like you could legit say, hey, I'm a switch hitter now? Or
I honestly, some kids
never
could do
there.
It their whole life and never do it.
Okay.
So before I will work with somebody, there's a certain way the body looks when it's doing that other, when it's swinging on that other side.
Yeah.
Where I'm saying to myself, okay, that could be.
After the first swing, you could probably tell.
Yeah. After a few, for sure.
You got to be pretty athletic, I think, right?
You do. Okay. And some kids just, you know, they don't look crippled when they're swinging the opposite way. And some kids look like there's a serious problem.
Okay.
You know, they are very uncoordinated, very imbalanced, and the hand eye just isn't there. So I've over the years, many, many times have talked to kids about that.
You just say, Georgie, maybe.
Yeah. Because people say, hey, what do you think? You could be a switch hitter? I'm like, well, let's take a look. Yeah.
No. And then you see him swing. You're like,
yeah.
How about soccer?
Right. Right. Yeah. Cause I mean, sometimes it could take, and the other factor about that is that if let's say you are a right-handed hitter, this is baseball, softball, it doesn't matter to be a switch hitter, but you're a right-handed hitter in baseball. In baseball, there's more right-handed pitchers than left-handed pitchers.
Okay.
So if you become a switch hitter, you would be switching off of your strong side to become a lefty. And you'd be hitting lefty more often than righty, which doesn't typically make sense.
No, no.
The funny thing was, that's how it happened for me.
Okay.
But I was ambidextrous, and my coach had a hit the other way day at our last practice one year when I was 10 years old. And I hit the first ball I tried to hit, I crushed.
Okay.
And it was just like, you're doing that the next game. And I did the same thing in the game, and it was like, it was it forever. I was a switcher from then on.
Oh, really?
But that was just... I was just ambidextrous.
Okay.
I was lucky in that way.
Okay.
But most kids are not, and some have the feel and some don't.
Okay. Is there a point at which there's you hit the ball off the tee too many times per day? Say like a kid, hey, coach, I hit the ball. I'm doing 600 balls off a tee a day. Is that too much?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah. I think because I don't think it's reasonable to maintain focus and purpose throughout that many repetitions.
Okay.
I think it would become more of an autopilot deal. And to some degree, that's not the worst thing in the world. But because I know there were times when Charlie and Joe would take crazy amounts of swings, but yeah. They were usually kind of searching for a feel of some sort.
Okay.
And, you know, and frankly, the whole T-work thing for me brings back a ton of great memories.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I just remember like you have a very small, like a one car garage.
Yeah.
It looked like a haunted house because there was like blankets and tarps hanging from like all, I thought like a guy with a creepy mask was going to pop out at me, but right in the middle was a tee.
Yeah.
And it looked like those tarps were like been there since like 1920.
Yeah. They had been beaten up.
Yeah. Severely. They got some work. Yeah.
And there's holes in the garage, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite stories was it was about this time of year and I was teaching all day on a Saturday and the sun was beginning to come down. It was, I believe it was 14, no, was it 14 or 17 degrees on my car thermometer when I pulled in the driveway and Charlie was hitting off a tee, but he wasn't in the garage. He was about 20 feet outside of the garage, hitting back into the garage. So
hopefully line drive.
Yes, okay. For the most part, but there were some knocks in the front of the garage. So he may have missed a couple, but. You know, and just loving every minute of it.
Jeez.
And he asked me to keep the lights in the car on so he could see better.
Because it was getting dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like, what, you said 14 degrees?
Yeah, it was either 14 or 17, I think it was. But it was in the teens.
Gosh.
And he, you know, he had a sweatshirt on and a little hat, but he just wanted to hit.
Yeah.
Get that feel, you know, because, and in both of Charlie and Joe's case, they had advanced to a point where they understood their mechanics and they were kind of searching for a feel difference or if they had something that didn't feel right, they were trying to work out of it.
Okay.
So.
And so you get to a point where you're a little bit more skilled like your boys were. You could even know when you have a little hitch in your swing and a tee is a great place to kind of get it out.
Definitely.
Okay.
Because you can place it wherever you need to put it. You know, if you're having trouble hitting that low outside pitch, you place it there and you can hammer away at it until you feel right about it.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it.
There's nothing wrong. And Jim didn't say this, but I think he's saying it. In that particular case, no matter how much skill you have, there's nothing wrong with putting in the time and the effort because you're going to get to another level and another level and another level. And what separates really skilled kids, because the funnel gets really tight after a while as you move up levels. What really separates the kids is the work you put in.
No question.
Yeah, and you see that all the time with your own children,
true.
But also the kids that you coach too.
Absolutely, and I think there's this, you gain a knowledge and an understanding of your body and how it feels and how it improves. And I can have a conversation with an advanced hitter that is so profoundly different than one that with someone who's rarely swings the bat because they just haven't felt the different things that you can feel as you're trying to work through some of these issues.
Okay. And then there's having a conversation with me.
Right.
And you actually get
slightly different level.
You actually get dumber. You actually lose students.
I feel my IQ drop.
Hey, Mr. Donovan, I heard you on the Move the Beans podcast. We're switching to trumpet. We're not doing that anymore. Move the Beans. Okay. Yeah. So what else you got?
All right. So the other thing that I think is, relative to that whole T-work thing, I think I'm always looking for ways to marry visualization with actual physical work.
Okay.
So that's another great place where you can work on visualizing. You can visualize any situation. You can visualize any sort of a pitch or location, whatever you want to do. And I just think that adds a lot of value.
So you're saying
visualization.
Yeah, thank you. So I put the ball on the tee. It's winning run at second base. I mean, go all the way through the process.
You could,
and put yourself in that.
Yes.
It's an inside pitch. He's trying to jam me, and I'm going to go the other way and score the runner, and we win the game. So you're saying that all that to do, you can visualize all that with the idea of working your muscle memory and swinging like that helps.
Yeah, absolutely. I just feel like that enhances the movement tremendously.
Okay.
Because it's, it just, it gives it so much more depth and quality. And I think if I used to see, I didn't hit off a tee myself. I used to do dry swings. I literally no hitting balls, just swinging the bat.
Oh, really?
Combined with the visualization. That was my routine.
Wow.
You know, hundreds of times a day. So I'd go in my basement and many times with the lights off, and my senses were, I felt enhanced because I didn't have the lights on. So I gained a better feel for what I was doing. And that was always a visualization attached to that.
So you would stand like swing in your basement with the lights off.
Yeah. Try to find, you know, there was a couple times where I hit the pole and that was rather scary.
Yeah.
Mom's screaming, what's going on down there? But yeah, so I think that was a way that I could jump into that kind of dream sequence but have a physical connection to it as
well. Wow, okay. So, you never hit like Uncle Herb who was staying over for the weekend?
No.
In the basement?
Nope, it was all good.
Quit swinging that bat, Jimmy. You almost hit Uncle Herb.
Yeah.
You have an Uncle Herb?
I didn't, unfortunately. Mm. It would have been good if I had.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. It would have been scary. We would have closed it up and got out of here.
Yeah. But the other thing that I am very passionate about relative to the games of baseball and softball is throwing.
Okay.
And playing catch in general. Now that's, to me, there's really nothing better or easier that you can do than to play catch with your kid.
Okay.
Or play catch with your brother. And frankly, being able to see my boys play catch was one of the true joys of my life.
Mm.
Because they learned it properly, I believe, and they took it to another level, and it was really special.
They were like 12 houses away from each other, probably.
They literally, yeah, I mean, they played damn near every day.
Really?
I mean, it literally.
Winter.
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't coming down snow, they would go out and play catch.
Jeez.
But anyway, as far as catch is concerned, the things that I focus on, I think that most don't, is staying square. So I always say playing catch is, or throwing is, a sideways thing. So when you're throwing, your chest should not be, when you're aiming or stepping to throw, your chest should not be open. So the person, so let's say you have a Mickey Mouse on your shirt.
Yeah.
They shouldn't see Mickey until you're about to release the ball.
Okay.
But when you're first stepping towards that target, it should be your shoulder and elbow, and you should be essentially looking over your kind of shoulder tricep area, and your elbow should be, your elbow, not your hand, should be the target point.
Okay.
Okay, because lots of people teach their kids to point the glove at the target. And the reality is when you point the glove at the target, it opens the shoulders a little bit and actually makes them point left or right if they're a lefty.
Okay.
So closed shoulders, elbow as the target, and you know, you kind of put yourself into an L shape with that glove hand arm and point at the target. I always say if you and I are playing catch, regardless of where we are on the field, there's always an imaginary line between us.
Okay.
And that line is the target line. So the objective is to have your feet, your actual feet will be stepping on this imaginary line perpendicular to it,
mm-hmm.
but your general body should be parallel to that target line or literally on top of it. So every time you catch a ground ball, you catch a fly ball, you need to work your feet to put yourself sideways parallel to that target line.
So you can get ready to throw.
So you can get ready to throw.
Okay.
So many poor throws are a result of bodies that are not square to the target line.
Is that why you see like a lot of, I mean, major league players obviously do this a lot, but you see them like take a kind of a rounded approach to a ground ball because they're already getting themselves in position to throw before they even get the ball.
Well, that's part of it. I think part of that is also creating a straight line through which they can move as they're catching the ball. They can move toward their target, and then they turn sideways on that same line.
Okay.
So that's a little bit before, but it definitely sets them up to throw better.
And so when you talk about the elbow, and that's a great pitching tip also, right?
Totally.
Okay. So you just want to keep that elbow in, and that is your elbow point is what should be focused on home plate at that point.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And I think like if you go out to any little league mound on a field,
yeah,
you will see that the hole, the stride foot hole, you know, you've got the hole that's next to the rubber.
Yeah.
It's been dug out.
Yeah.
Then there's usually another hole. And that hole, instead of being straight toward home plate, is usually set, you know, anywhere between 6 inches to a foot to the left.
Just off.
Because kids tend to step open. Because it's somewhat of an awkward feeling to step with sort of sideways at something.
Yeah.
And most kids are more inclined to open their front side prematurely.
Yeah.
So the kids who learn that properly, and that's always been one of my passions with coaches, you know, I sometimes like to teach the younger players because I believe that if I can teach them how to play catch properly, how to square up, their defense immediately surges upward. It just it's just something that, you know, every team that you try to make, and this is a, you know, talk about high school kids going out for the high school team. Every team that you try to make, the most repetitions that you will have in front of a coach will be in the catch lines where you're playing catch.
Okay.
You're warming up. But what I always argue or urge people to do is to try to see playing catch as playing defense, because defense is playing catch in many different forms. The pitcher and the catcher are playing catch with one another. The shortstop is playing catch with the first baseman, the left fielder with the cutoff man, on and on. And if you are constantly working your feet and body to get parallel to that target line, because you can always imagine, all right, I'm throwing to this target, draw the imaginary line, make sure your feet and body are parallel to that line. I'll talk about you're closing, your body is like a door and you're closing it to that target line.
Okay.
And if you can do that, then you have a chance to stay, you know, it's like your brain calculates how the arm is going to release the ball. And if you are not close to that target line, I believe that the brain has a much more complicated equation to figure out.
Yeah.
And it's just not as repeatable.
Yeah.
Whereas if you get closed, and I had this problem myself, and when I really learned to close it up and square it up, it was a profound difference in my accuracy. And I just found, and it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I'm every kid I can find, I'm going to teach. For every kid I run across who wants to learn, I'm going to teach this, because it's just, it's such a game changer.
Yeah.
And I know my boys were both really, you know, Joe still to this day is a tremendous thrower. And a lot of that has to do with the constant, you know, I would just remind him, you could ask him, you know, close up.
So if you're a dad and you have a kid out there who's, you know, in the, you know, 10, 11, 12-year-old level, even maybe even younger, mm-hmm. 9, 10 or whatever, and he's a little bit wild, is it because he's opening up too much?
Most often, yes.
Yeah.
Most often it could be changed by making sure that the shoulders, particularly the shoulder, feet and shoulders, are parallel to that line.
Okay.
And the other thing that is very common is the arm tends to drop. Now, I will say that when you do close up and square up properly, the arm tends to more easily get into that proper throwing position, mm-hmm. which is elbow, shoulder high. Now, you know, the game is so filled with bad advice, it's crazy. You know, swing at anything, it's batting practice.
What are you saying, Jim?
One of the dumbest things. Did you say that?
No, I don't think I did. No, see, let me just say this. My batting practice was my time to shine. So I was throwing junk to these kids. Okay. They were like,
"You're just trying to make."
We're supposed to swing the, like, we're supposed to be hitting the ball, coach. I'm like, try to hit it. Try to hit it. I got tons of pitches coming your way.
Well, my argument was always, and I remember I was 11 years old, and I was in I had a coach who used to talk about, "Hey, swing at anything. It's batting practice." And then I get in a game and I swing at a bad pitch, and he's all upset.
He's yelling.
I'm like, well, this doesn't work, right? So I tell kids all the time, I don't want you to swing at anything. I want you to pay attention. Let the bad ones go.
Yeah.
That's practice. That's hitting.
Yeah.
You know? So, but the other piece of advice that's so bad about throwing is that get your arm back. And what people typically say, and I'm standing here with the cross position.
Yeah.
And your elbows should be far apart on that parallel line, but your hands should not be extended, because a throwing arm is more of an L shape, frankly, in its initial positioning than it is an extended straight.
Yeah.
And I think that is what often happens. So get your arm back.
Yeah.
And the kids just they throw with a single lever instead of a multi-lever.
So my kid's 11 years old, and he's a decent pitcher, has some good speed, but he's like high and outside, or high, and he's high with his pitches. How do I, is there something I could do to keep that elbow, the elbow in, and have him close?
Well, I don't know that there's any magic to it other than just working on a mindful, I mean, there are creative ways you can do it. I mean, I've had kids, you know, have a T underneath their elbow, and then they have to turn away from the T or something like that. But I think if you can just remind them to keep the elbow as high as the shoulder, then oftentimes that'll correct itself.
Okay.
But if there's a target issue, if you're always throwing high, look at a lower target. You know, look down.
Okay.
And I underline this three times, do not tell them to release the ball later, because a release point thought is typically a bad thought, which can lead to all sorts of problems. So I think it's more helpful to think about having them look to a different target.
Okay.
If everything's low, have them look higher. If everything's high, have them look lower, and let the brain kind of figure out the details.
And the brain will do that.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. In most cases.
Yeah. Okay.
Over time.
And if it doesn't, then put him at second base.
Exactly. Or scorebook or something like
you're
that.
You're more of a left fielder, Eugene.
Yes.
Out there. Absolutely. Okay. So what about girls who are, you know, because girls do the underhand kind of fastball pitching, softball.
The windmill.
Yeah. So do you work with a lot of softball pitchers or no?
I do not.
Okay.
And
that's just an other animal right there.
It is. I mean, I can do very, very basic, but it's a pretty advanced thing.
Is it?
Yeah. Just a lot to it. And it's something that takes a long time to master as a player. I think much harder than baseball throwing.
Have you ever faced like a live pitcher, like underhand softball pitcher?
I haven't faced one to hit, but I've caught them before.
Is it insane?
It can be beyond insane.
Really?
I'll never forget. This is probably, they're
closer, right?
They're 43-ish feet at the time. I think this, I was catching a college pitcher. And this is going back. This was probably in the late 90s. And the guy who was teaching next to me said, Jimmy, you got to come see this. He's like, catch. He's like, he's got good hands. So I'm sitting back there ready to make the catch. She throws the pitch. Now she screamed, like some of these softball pitchers will like scream.
Literally. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that happened. So that was a little startling in itself. Next thing you know, I'm thinking I'm about to catch the ball, and it skimmed the top of my head.
Whoa.
Called a rise ball. And I'm thinking, oh, I could have died right there, but you know, she could have squared me right in the face, but
oh my gosh.
Thankfully she didn't. But it was amazing to see. You know, obviously if I had some experience with it, I'd probably adjust, but
yeah,
it was, you know, some of the movement that those girls can put on the ball. I mean, I guess it's like baseball too. You can do some crazy things with the ball, but it's the hard part though that I see for young players is just controlling
what they're doing,
the direction.
Yeah.
You know, cause once you get to be an advanced pitcher, the accuracy is crazy.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
Now, ever since then, you haven't been able to grow hair up on your head. It's
buzzed, like, I'm out.
It
We're
buzzed
done.
You right down the center.
Exactly.
There.
Exactly. I'm
That's
out.
That's kind of sad.
No mas.
Now, is it true that softball, I don't know if we talked about this, I don't think so, but girls, when they training like softball hitting, there's like they have to yell out the color dot on the ball or something like that?
I think there are some who have done things like that. But I've seen that in baseball too.
Your concentration so much, you're yelling out color dots. And baseball?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's like a vision training thing.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't heard a lot of that lately. And I know I'm actually interested to look into that because there's more research behind, you know, what actually works relative to vision.
Okay.
But yeah, it's that's a big part of the game too. I mean, technology has really, you know, there are times where I feel like a dinosaur because, you know, people are taking exit velos and launch angles and all these analytics.
Yeah.
And, you know, my emotions are mixed on it because I feel like it's good to know how hard the ball is coming off your bat.
Yeah.
And it can be a data point that can help inform your instruction or development or progress. But I get nervous because I've seen so many times where kids are swinging for exit velocities.
Okay.
And it breaks down their swings. They just don't keep it together well. And it doesn't tend, and of course there's exceptions, but it doesn't tend to translate well into games.
Okay.
So I'm sort of on the fence and maybe it's just going to be a matter of digging into it and learning it more. I've tended to use my eyes and my brain more than,
You're saying that maybe that approach could be just another bad thing to shoot for.
Yes.
Like, oh, I'm going to hit a 450 homer. Right. I want my exit velocity to be this much. Right. So you were thinking about the wrong thing.
Yeah, because I've found I know for me personally, my ideal swings happened when I was in an 80 to 85% effort range. It's not an absolute number. It was my relative number where I said, all right, I'm swinging 85%.
Yeah.
That's where I hit the ball the best. That's where I was balanced. That's where I'd square the ball up the best and hit it the farthest. So trying to hit, if someone's saying, okay, you got to try to hit 100 miles an hour exit velo.
Yeah.
I think it's a unique hitter who can say to themselves, all right, let's stay smooth. And you're usually kind of taking daddy hacks in there.
Yeah.
And those don't necessarily translate to good pitch tracking and solid contact and balance and things like that. Well,
there's a reason why Dave Kingman struck out like 800 times this season. Yeah, that's what he was doing. He was trying to just whack the ball.
Well, and it becomes a feast or famine thing. And to me those are not my values in the game because I believe that the game has so many parts of the game are great because of they're not just about brute force and so forth. So I think it's definitely a part of the game and all the big league clubs use these tools and their tools, but I think we have to be careful to put too much emphasis on them.
Yeah. That was a Batacola thrown out Dave Kingman reference from the 70s, baby.
That was good. But
Dave Kingman and Mick Kelleher.
Absolutely.
Those were some good.
Jerry Morales, Jose Cardinal, Barry Foote, Steve Swisher.
Barry Foote. What is Barry Foote?
He was a catcher.
Was he?
For the Cubs. Yeah. He might even be cut for the Sox or Yankees too.
Really? Mick Kelleher. I think Mick Kelleher, when they got traded, I don't know if one of them was on the Cubs, one was on the Mets, I think. Mick Kelleher and Dave Kingman got in a little scrum at second base.
Oh, I remember that.
Really?
Vaguely. Yeah. I don't remember it specifically, but yeah, there was a little hullabaloo.
Well, I think Kingman slid into Kelleher because he was second baseman, and then they got a little, and Mick Kelleher was like up to Dave Kingman's waist.
He was a scrappy little lad.
He wanted a
Kingman piece. Was an absolute beast.
He used to throw. Was that the guy that used to throw his bat like after he struck out? He used to like whip it in the air like about 1,000 feet.
I don't remember that. But I remember him missing a lot.
Yeah, I think it was
also hitting some prodigious drives.
Yeah. How tall was he? How big was he?
I want to say he was probably 6'4", 6'5".
See, he always seemed like
but I don't know. I was younger, little.
Yeah, I always thought he was bigger. I thought he was like 6'8 or something like that.
I don't think he was that big, but I wouldn't be surprised. If someone said he was 6'6", I wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, he just looked like a monster.
But, athletes back in those days weren't as big as some of them now.
He was a skinny monster. Yeah. He wasn't anything like Aaron Judge or what.
Right.
Some of those guys are just, they're big. They got size, plus they have muscle and mass and everything else. Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we barely scratched the surface like we did before, and we're already an hour into it. Jim and I talked about he's big into helping parents with the game of baseball as we're watching our kids. And so I think you have a ton of stuff on that too. Yeah, also
just finding enjoyment in that process.
Yeah. So I think, as the baseball season develops a little bit, we got spring training starting next week for major league players. I'm sure if your son or daughter plays, they're starting some indoor practicing. If they're not already doing
They've
it
already
now.
Done it, yeah. Most likely.
So we'll let the season crank up. We'll get Jimmy back in here in the summer and we'll give us as parents some habits and some tips on how to enjoy watching your son or daughter play when they're actually in the field. I'm sure you have a ton of info about that.
Definitely got opinions.
Jim has opinions.
Informed, hopefully.
Yes, totally.
Informed by my experience.
Certainly. Yeah, absolutely. So come on back. We'll have you back for a third time and a fourth time and a fifth time. Yeah, so because I could love talking baseball and just
good stuff.
Looking into your beautiful face as you talk arm angles.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Anyways, thanks for being here, Jimbo.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Yeah,
and do you have a website or anything? I was about to ask you that before.
I don't.
You need to get like a website.
I should. You're right. That's what my wife tells me.
Next
my
time,
lovely wife Karen tells me.
Yeah. Next time you come in here, you better have some kind of website we can direct people to, because in the Chicagoland area, if you're looking for, you know, I guess you don't want to work 24 hours a day, but it's always good to have business.
Yeah.
So we'll figure that out. And if something comes up in the meantime, we could always post something, Move the Bean stuff too. Yeah. So that'd be good. So anyways, thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. I appreciate all the listeners out there. And get yourself to a baseball game this season. It's the greatest game ever. So until next time, keep on moving the beans, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.